I propose that we start where we left last time. We were busy with the public submissions, and until we finalize that, then we can then. I've already given members to go through the bill and consult with their caucuses. By now, members are supposed to have questions with regard to the amendment when we do the clause by clause as committee now. For now, it's still the engagement between ourselves and the department. Because the clause by clause would not be able to do it now. We will finalize the bill next week Tuesday. We'll finalize the bill next week Tuesday. So, meaning that today is the last chance for parties to finalize their input. Next week, when we meet, we'll then do clause by clause amending those clauses that we must amend. And sort of finalize the bill. In fact, I would say that much of work has been done just now for the committee now to make input and finalize. So let's proceed to where we were last time, and then once we're done with that, we'll then adjourn the meeting. I'm not going to. We're in page 12. The rest of the discussion and proposals, just capture them. So remember, we're discussing at the same time we're sort of proposing a. You remember, Dion? We're proposing certain amendments and taking some of the issues how the members of the public have raised them. So what follow Adab will then at the end present how to the final the engagement as we engage. Then you'll then weigh it based on the issues. When you go clause by clause again, you're still going to participate, but it's going to be the committee now that will do the final recommendations. That's the correct approach, no?
Yes, sir, isn't that something?
Correct. So, yeah, that we are at, on page 12. Which one is this one?
Chairperson, if I may, I think last time when we marked it on our, we clause 14 of the bill, which is actually on page 13 of the document, inserting section the new section 21B, mm-hmm. Spouse independence of refugees. That's where we stopped last time, because we dealt with the issue where we said, are we going to define the term mentally disabled person? We said there's already legislation dealing with these issues, etc. So I think we've passed the section, the new insertion, section 21A, on page 12, so we're now on page 13, clause 14, inserting section 21B. Okay, spouse independence of refugees. The contributions made were to revise the title of the section, that spouse independence of refugees and asylum seekers. And that there was also notes on the numbering, but I think we dealt with issues of numbering before, that why are the sections not numbered 21-2 instead of 21-AB and C? There was just a question about that from the UNHCR. The contribution from LHR concerning the and asylum seekers were the fact that asylum seekers' families could in fact also join them. So that perhaps should be reflected in the title. Concerning 21B subsection 1, what is the potential impact of this section on the principle of family unity and the right to dignity in the case of the cessation of dependency, particularly for persons who have been living within the Republic for an extended period of time? And another contribution for subsection 1 is a person who applies for refugee status in terms of section 21 and who would like one or more of his her or her spouses and dependents to be granted refugee status, and the suggestion is that from there on the sentence should read, must include the details of such a spouse and dependent in the application, as opposed to must when applying for asylum, as in implying that they might necessarily be there. Assume that the spouse or dependent or person will arrive together with the applicant, whereas they might not necessarily be there, so the sentence could be changed. I don't know if we did it by subclause, or should I just go the entire section 21B, and then I think let's just do section 21B completely, and then we'll look at, or there's quite a few suggestions with 21B, so let's move it section by section and subsection by subsection.
Subsection one.
Okay, so basically the issue of numbering, is any indication of, I think this issue of the similar numbering was raised before in one of the previous sections.
Yeah. So let me hear from Dion, what is your take on the...
Yes, Chairperson, with regard to the numbering, it's precisely that we have discussed it on the previous section. You use capital A, capital B when you're inserting something new, because it's got to do with the cross-referencing later on, and when pieces of legislation are amended, the main act. When you insert something, you can't say it's not 21A because there's already a 21-1A. So you have to put in a capital to make sure that it's to be very sure and for the people that it's a new insertion. So that is just drafting style and format, and the state law advisors would also indicate that with regard to the numbering, Chairperson thinks.
So this proposal, as it stands, does it fall away, or what is your recommendation? This proposal?
In terms of the title,
can spouses and dependents of applicants also could it apply? It could in fact apply, spouses and dependents of refugees and asylum seekers. I think it's just basically a point of clarity, and I think it shouldn't be a problem in terms of changing the. Heading?
I think the heading wouldn't be a problem to change it to as suggested in terms of adding asylum seekers.
Okay.
The points raised by the UCT Law Clinic, the right to dignity in the case of cessation of dependency for persons who have been living within the Republic for extended period. So basically, if the primary applicant, if their status ceases with the dependent, then still in, if they'd been there for a substantial period, be able to continue residence or not? I think this is a question raised.
If we have a look at subsection 3, that thing deals with the question raised here. It does say whenever the dependent or recognized refugees within the Republic in accordance with an asylum seeker's permit or has been granted asylum in terms of this act and ceases to be a dependent by virtue of marriage or cessation of his or dependence upon the recognized as the case may be, he or she may apply in the prescribed form to be permitted to continue to remain. So there should be an evaluation of the status there. I think that is as clear as
that. For example,
if
one is still a school or something. So I will say it is covered under the current amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we go now to... No, we leave the second suggestion would not be necessary if you have dealt already with
Okay, we're moving on to subsection 2. The asylum seeker or refugee the all these contributions are basically including both asylum seeker or and refugee, as opposed to just refugee, as is stated in the amendment bill. That's from Lawyers for Human Rights. Also, they're saying that subsection 2 is unenforceable and unreasonable, overruling the existing court order that an asylum seeker or refugee may protest his or her status at the newest regular address, suggests replacing the dependent at a refugee office as opposed to at the refugee reception office, which is already standard practice. It is impractical to legislate that birth must be reported to the refugee reception office within a month of the birth, when so many asylum seekers scarcely speak a word of English. This should be rather dealt with in the regulations to the Act, which allows, with allowances made for exceptions and what is to happen if the birth is not reported. Also, in terms of subsection 2, propose that any refugee already processed whose child is born in the Republic must, within a reasonable time period. Okay, this is a proposed section by the proposed amendment by the Treatment Action Campaign. Must within a reasonable period of time after the period of birth of his or her child register such a child as a dependent at the nearest or any reception offices, refugee reception office. Any refugee is in the process of being processed whose child is born in the Republic can include his or her child in that process at the refugee reception office that is processing the application.
Okay, I think to come in the, with regard, I'll first deal with the question of 21B2, wherein we are saying within 1 month of birth, the child must be registered. If we look at the provisions of the Birth and Death Registration Act, a notice of birth should be made within 1 month. And thereafter, there are late registration process, and we already know with late registration process that there are serious problems there. And this will help for purpose of any child born, even in terms of our requirements, if a South African is living outside the Republic, when the child is registered, we need a certificate from that country of birth. And usually, certificates are issued within a month. So the issues around having given birth within a month, you need to go and register. That is applicable to everyone in the Republic, in a way, and it's unless practical-wise, it's now currently not a must that a mother should go there in terms of the Birth and Registration Act. You can still have someone registering the birth of your child for as long as the person would attest to the status and identity of the child.
The second issue was registering way at the reception office that processes his or her application.
Oh yeah, okay, that is the issue. Yeah. So what did you say? We said that it may not necessarily be in the office where the person has applied or has registered their status. It can be anywhere in any office, huh?
Yeah. I think that should be fine, Chairperson, which is dependent at a refugee reception or not a refugee office. I think it's a refugee reception office. It's a typo there in there as well. Chairperson, just so you know, I don't want to take the committee back, but I don't think we've dealt with sub 1 where they said that we must include the details of such spouse and dependent. Chairperson, yeah. I've just got a suggestion there.
Yeah.
I think we should actually leave it as it is, but what you can do is, I agree that we can say you must include the details, but then in redrafting, we must probably look at saying something that a person who applies for refugee status in terms of Section 21 and who would like one or more of his or spouse and dependents to be granted refugee status must, when applying for asylum, also include the details of such spouse and dependents in that application. Because they're deleting this must when applying for asylum, they want to take that out. Now we say no, when you apply for asylum, you must also include that in that application.
Yeah, so that you don't end up getting spouses out of the blue of the family.
Yes.
So we ask you about your wife, your second wife, or your third wife, or you can just put attach their name, if you know they don't bear family. And then that will be dealt with within your regulations.
Yes, sir. The enabling provision will be here, obviously, and they will most probably be in the regulation section, something
okay.
pertaining to forms and things that we may screw out of.
Let's give math for me. So that, okay, that's fine. Okay. And then B2, we've done B2, ne? In the residue, which one is one, the
within that is okay, so it has to be the month.
But yeah. In terms of they're not necessarily being registering the child in person, the proposed amendment says any refugee whose child is born in the Republic must within the 1 month of the birth of his or her child. So that means that it implies that they have to do it in person. So
yeah, why do you have to get another person? You can't have another person to determine the child. Why? That's where child trafficking starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're opening up. You say any person can do that. Any person can go take the single child and join the single child. Mm-hmm. And that makes you a problem. Because you have to deal with issues of child trafficking and all of those sort of things.
Okay.
And it's not a right, especially in the Western country. Okay?
So that will not take us.
Okay.
That proposal, I think it's a dangerous proposal. Okay?
Okay, so the Truth and Action campaign is basically just a duplication, so of the first suggestion. Okay, 21B3, dealing with
when
asylum seeker permits that have been granted in terms of acts ceases to be a dependent. Okay, so this is what we referred to before. What is the practical implication of this section on the children of divorced refugees? In that it may not be in the best interest of the child to be removed from the parent who was the principal applicant. Also, the obligation that a divorced refugee must reapply for refugee status does not include a time frame, i.e. within a reasonable period of time. Secondly, include where dependent of an asylum seeker or recognized refugees within the Republic in accordance with an asylum seeker permit or has been granted asylum in terms of the act and ceases to be a dependent by virtue of marriage or cessation of his or her dependence upon the asylum seeker or recognized refugee. So basically just including asylum seekers in all these amendments and carries on as well, Republic as an asylum seeker or refugee. So basically just the inclusion thereof, which again shouldn't arise any problems. Clarify that the permission to remain within with the same status as was previously held by adding as a refugee or asylum seeker be added after the words within the Republic, which is the same suggestion as above from the UNHCR. Yeah, so that's subsection.
Through you, I think the practical implications of the question about practical implications, I think the section is clear that if there happens to be, one ceases to be a dependent, you need to apply, I think we say in the prescribed form, that should be in the prescribed manner, wherein we'll say, this is the procedure that you follow, than the form, because the form will mean we design a specific form, you only fill it, but then the time frames as they raise it here, will be, if you say in the prescribed manner, that will be covered. But then adding the words to remain in the Republic as an asylum seeker, it's clear, it says, in accordance with the provisions of this act. So that says it all in a way.
Okay, so manner, okay.
Okay. Are we fine with that?
Okay, so basically it's just the inclusion of manner as opposed to form, and that will cover the concern. What was the additional? So I have just a bit of a reference here. Okay, that's covered then.
Chairperson?
Sorry, Chair, I just want to also address this, where they're talking about something, where they want us to include the word an asylum seeker or. It says that we're a dependent of an asylum seeker or a recognized refugee. Now, I think there's a reason why we're only talking about a recognized refugee here, because in subsection 3, this is 21b3, you say, where dependent of a recognized refugee is within the Republic in accordance with an asylum seeker permit, meaning that this person is a refugee, he's a recognized refugee, but the dependent is on an asylum seeker permit. So in other words, doesn't have refugee status on. But now, if you're going to add the words an asylum seeker, it means that you're going to have an asylum seeker whose dependent is also an asylum seeker, so it's not even a recognized refugee per se. So I would not include the words an asylum seeker there in subsection 3, as they're suggesting. Because we specifically, I think, indicate that we're dependent of a recognized refugee. So there's a person that's already a refugee, and now the dependents are coming in, and they're on an asylum seeker permit.
So remove them.
Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Now we see them.
Okay, inserting section, section 21b4.
Reference to a good faith spousal relationship is problematic in that it violates the provisions of section 10 and 14 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa in terms of privacy. The proviso to section 21b offends the Constitution and should be deleted. It is, however, the same as the requirements for Immigration Act to acquire permanent residence through marriage. So, I mean,
we find that the one, we're just taking it away. There's nothing that
we can do. Okay, but I think this is one of the areas where you're trying to align your Immigration Act with your refugees Act, where the legislation speaks to each other.
Okay.
Subsection 5. There is a potential conflict with subsection 3 in cases where a person has been granted refugee status under the Act. Nothing contained in this Act prevents a dependent who has, in terms of subsection 3, been permitted to continue to remain in the Republic from applying for recognition as a refugee in accordance with the provisions of this Act. Person has been granted refugee status under the Act. I'm not sure what the point of NHR there was. But subsection 5 is nothing. The second contribution for subsection 5 is nothing contained in this Act prevents a dependent who has not, in terms of subsection 3 or 4, been permitted to continue to remain in the Republic from applying for recognition as a refugee in accordance with the provisions of this Act. It should be worded in the negative to cover cases where a person has not been allowed to remain as a refugee under sections 3 or 4. The inclusion of subsection 4 will prevent a situation where spouse must remain in an abusive relationship in order to maintain status.
Is there anything that we want to add as of this? The argument, I'm trying to understand the argument that they're placing here. I don't see too much. There's a potential conflict in subsection 4. So in case where the person has been granted to see the case that under the Act.
Yeah.
Nothing containing this Act prevents the defendant who has not, in terms of subsection 3 or 4, being permitted to continue to remain the Republic from applying for the
point. Chairperson, to be kind of with the first suggestion, there's a potential conflict. I don't see the conflict, to be quite honest, because
give him a chance to speak.
If they say there's a potential with something in cases where a person has been granted refugee status, if you look at subsection 3, you're talking about the dependent of a recognized refugee who is in the Republic in accordance with an asylum seeker permit. So how can this person have been granted refugee status in any case? You're talking about somebody that's in possession of an asylum seeker permit. Okay, it says or has been granted asylum in terms of the Act, meaning refugee status. And ceases to be a dependent by virtue of a marriage, etc. But they say nothing contained in the prevents a dependent who has, in terms of been permitted to continue in the Republic from applying for recognition as a refugee. I think what we're talking about there is a person that's in possession of an asylum seeker permit. If a person's got refugee status in terms of the Act, obviously, I mean, any court, if you go by way of interpretation, they won't apply this specific section then.
Yeah. And in terms of being stated in the negative?
I think stating it in the negative, what we'll say is, I think it will change the intention of the entire provision in a way that it follows what has been stated in subsection 3, as has been explained. And what will happen is that if asylum was not granted initially during the status determination process, we fail to understand as to whether or why the spouse should not be prevented from applying for refugee status. You know, we need a process where if a person is added or included in when applying for application, then we need to deal with that person within that provision. Then we don't cover even those that are not dealt with within the same section.
Members, is there anything that members would want to advance here of the proposal from the members? I'm just seeking to understand it myself.
I guess the relevant source definition is a bit of a tricky one.
Can we skip it? We'll come back to it.
Okay.
Let's skip this one.
Okay.
We'll just leave the question mark on it. We'll see if we come back to it again. But I can't even understand where we are. Okay, can we move to the section
21.6b. Notwithstanding any provisions contained in this section, the withdrawal of refugee status must be in accordance with Section 36 of this Act. It's basically an addition for 21b6. There isn't. It's a suggestion for adding an additional point.
Chairperson, my view in that regard, if I may through you, I don't think it's necessary because Section 36 already speaks about withdrawal of refugee status. I don't know why you would want to include a subsection 6 in that, notwithstanding any provision contained in that specific section.
No.
We're saying it's subject to the provision of promotion of Administrative Justice Act, and after consideration, that's now in Section 36.
No,
the DG may withdraw a person's refugee status if certain things happen.
Thank you. Can we move on?
Section 15 of the bill, or clause 15 of the bill, section 22 of the Principal Act.
Subsection 1, the RSD role as a queue manager detracts such a person from performing the functions of determining refugee status. The RSDO should concentrate on deciding applications and not referring asylum seekers to appointed officers. That's from UNHCR. Then another point being that the refugee status determination officer must, pending the outcome of the application in terms of Section 21.1, refer the applicant to the officers contemplated in Section 8.3. And then they deleted to be issued with and replaced it with who must issue an asylum seeker permit in the prescribed form, allowing the applicant to sojourn in the Republic temporarily, subject to any conditions determined and endorsed by the Director General, which are not in conflict with Constitution, international law, and explain such conditions to the applicant and record this in the prescribed form. So the addition there again of explaining the conditions to the applicant and recording them in the
advanced argument then.
Since the refugee reception officer has been abolished, it is imperative that officers contemplated in Section 8.3 must undertake their duties underlined in Section 4.1, which comes later.
I think, Chair,
yes.
In subsection 1, if we look at it, what we are saying is the RSDO will, pending the outcome of an application, meaning he or she is the person, the RSD is the person that knows this case will not be finalized today, then what we are saying is refer the applicant to the officers. These are the people that are currently refugee reception officers, and we are saying that they are admin, that they will be appointed to do administrative work. Then they will be attached to the RSD, office of an RSDO. Knowing the RSDO deals with so many number of applications, then those people will be referred for them to be issued. So it's like it's not conditional from the officers that are contemplated in Section 83 whether to issue or not. If the RSDO says go to that person will issue the permit. And furthermore, in terms of the question on whether turning the RSDO into the queue manager, that is not what the section says at all. The RSDO's office will be attached. Sorry, let me say there will be officers attached to the office of the RSDO who will perform administrative function. Queue managing is totally not what is envisaged here.
Chairperson, if I may just add there, if you look at Section 22.1, as my colleague has rightfully indicated, the refugee status determination of must, pending the outcome of an application term Section 21.1, refer that. So the application has not been finalized. We're waiting for the outcome. Now you refer that applicant to the officers contemplated in Section 8.3. Which officers are those? Those are the officers that the DG has now appointed to the refugee reception officers in order to perform the administrative functions. It's your current RROs. Okay? Why do they need to be sent there? In order to be issued with asylum seeker permits. Why do they want asylum seeker permits? To basically legitimize their stay within the country. So otherwise, if we don't do it, now they're saying it's a role in a queue manager. That's you need to refer them to them in order to be, because it's not the RSDO that issues the asylum seeker permit.
The person first appear, where does he appear? The first person that the asylum seeker would meet at the office would be the RSDO.
Yes, what we're trying to shorten the process is your RSDO. But your the current RRO, which would now be an administrative officer, would also assist with obtaining certain information if needs be. One of them which would be to issue an asylum seeker permit if an application under Section 21.1 is still pending. Because otherwise that person doesn't have a status as yet.
So we leave it as it is, there's no watch fund. But I'm not saying we're leaving it. We're not doing it. For now, we're not doing it. Okay? That's fine. Can we move on? Are we now? Section 2 done.
Okay. Subsection 2.
Your finished page.
Upon the issue of a permit in terms of subsection 1, any permit issued in terms of the applicant in terms of the Immigration Act becomes null and void and must forthwith be returned to the Director General for cancellation. The suggestions are that the obligation should be stated as a condition on an asylum seeker permit. To explain and return the permit may be too onerous if it is not made clear to the applicant up front. So to some of the points raised in the section above, about that the conditions must be explained to the applicant and recorded in the prescribed form. And then, why is forthwith omitted? The asylum permit should only be granted if asylum transit permits are handed in. Okay, yeah, basically there's 2 points there. Why is forthwith omitted? And also that the asylum seeker permit should only be granted if Section 23s are handed in. So we dealt with that first.
Chairperson, if I may, with regard to the word forthwith, I think the logical reason is it's just bad drafting. You shall forthwith do this. We always delete that from pieces of legislation. And as one of the things that we're trying to achieve with the amendment here is to clean up the language in the bill for the Act, currently as it stands as well, is just to delete the word forthwith, because it doesn't really have any impact at all, to be quite honest.
I wanted to say, okay, with regard to the second issue about the asylum permits should only be granted if asylum transit permit immigration are handed in. I think the idea here is if you are granted a permit that says within 14 days you need to go to a refugee reception office and you make an application issued, then that other one is no longer valid. So you hand it in, then it says you cannot use it any longer. That's the idea around the subsection.
Again? agree, yeah. But you must know this is the law. Not agree, know this is fine. Okay?
But there's no specification in the current amendment that section 22 should be handed in. Upon the permit,
it's in subsection 2.
Subsection 2.
It says upon the issue of a permit in terms of subsection 1, any permit issued to the applicant in terms of the Immigration Act, which is we are now doing away with aliens,
yes,
becomes null and void and must be returned to the application for cancellation.
Okay.
I think it, as we issue the permit, one of the logical things is to inquire whether you had any section, any permit in terms of the Immigration Act.
But what they're saying is that it should be handed in. Return to the director. Yeah, return to directions. Okay, no, that's fine. Okay, I mean, it's basically covered. Yeah, okay. Subsection 3. A specific time period within which to extend should be stated. Power to amend the conditions gives too much discretion to the RSTO. Subsection 3 also. The officer contemplated in section 8.3, not may, must, from time to time, pending the finalization of the asylum claim, extend the period for which a permit has been issued in terms of subsection 1. RSTO should no longer amend conditions other than time. This will ensure uniformity. If not stated in the Act, however, the periods for which extensions can be given must be stipulated and standardized in the regulations. Provide for the period within which a refugee claim must be determined by the RSTO. Provide for specific duration of renewal of asylum permits. A period of 6 months is a reasonable time, even if the turnaround times improve. This is so subsection 3.
You can go first.
With regard to subsection 3, we say, first of all, the officers contemplated in section 8.3. That surely is not your RSTO. It's going to be your administrative officers that we're talking about there. And they may, from time to time, extend the period. And it's also, it's incorrect to say that the RSTO should no longer amend conditions. That is being deleted. Or amend the condition subject to which a permit has been so issued is being deleted. And that, in actual fact, also it pertains to your administrative officers, not your RSTOs. So it is being deleted. I cannot understand.
And furthermore, as we explained earlier, the usage of the word may, meaning the officer will have interaction with the RSDO, who is to determine the particular application of the applicant to say, have you made a decision? If not, then when do you envisage making that application? So the time, it will be difficult to say from this time to that time, but then with the interaction with the RSDO, then there will be an agreement as to which date do we extend the permit.
I probably want to accommodate the must part of the suggestion that has been made. The section could read that the officers contemplated in section 8.3 must from time to time, pending the finalization of the claim, extend the period for which a permit has been issued in terms of subsection 1. If there is there's instance in terms of the, because there is always a dispute in terms of the, renewals of permits. So they would want that to be emphasized in the Act in terms of saying the official, they've got an obligation to extend. So if we can accommodate that by.
Well, I wouldn't have a problem if we say, if we use the word must, then we say pending the finalization of the application. That will clearly mean the applicant shouldn't, asylum seeker shouldn't just come into the office and say extend my permit.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. That would not have a problem with.
Chairperson, I just think what one would do, I agree with what is being suggested there, that one might say pending the finalization of an application in terms of, and then refer to the specific section. I think it's section 21.1, but I stand to be corrected.
Mm-hmm.
Where you make specific reference to the section in terms of which they are applying for asylum. And not call it an asylum claim.
Yeah.
It's vague.
Let's be specific to what section we're referring.
Okay, so are we okay with this, or what I was saying?
Yeah, I'm just taking notes. Okay.
In terms of providing for the period within which a refugee came must be determined by the RCO of a specific duration, a period of 6 months suggested by the UNHCR as opposed to the current, which is anywhere from 1 month to 3 months. What is the feelings there?
No, Chairperson, to be quite honest, I don't think we must entertain this, because if you're going to set a specific period, it may differ from case to case, because there's going to be interaction with the RSDO, and it might say that we're going to finalize this case within a week's time. Now you want to give a 6 month extension just because it's made obligatory in the Act. Okay. I don't think that we should entertain that. Thanks, Chair.
Is that what you're saying? You agree? Reasonable time. Adam?
Yeah, there's a difficulty when it comes to reasonable time. What is reasonable to my colleague here won't be reasonable to me. So we'll end up going to court and say, what is a reasonable time?
Maybe we can get from Refugee Affairs in terms of practicalities
when doing research about particular countries as to what is involved there, because if we say not exceeding 6 months and you find it difficult to get the proper information about a particular country, I'm not sure about the practicalities in terms of researching. Maybe Land Function would assist us there.
I think I agree with Dion for us not to mention the time, because the systems which we've introduced now, and by fast-tracking to say the person will see the RSDO first, is that, I mean, it's possible for us to finalize the fast-tracking cases same day. Therefore, if we put the time frame, we will be taken to task to say, but the Act is saying 6 months, so I think let's stick to not mentioning anything, because we know within Refugee Affairs that those fast-track, the cases which we need to fast-track, we can finalize same day. But then if we need to conduct research or research further, then we can give the normal extension period.
Chairperson, if I may just add, just to say, they, once again, they're referring, they say, provide for the period within which a refugee claim must be determined by the RSDO. If you look at subsection 3, it does not deal with the RSDO. It deals with the offices contemplated in Section 83, which is your administrative offices, which issues an asylum seeker permit. It's not a refugee. So status has not been determined as yet whether this is a refugee or not.
Okay.
So we leave it as it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Adam?
Yeah.
Over to you, Chair.
Okay. In terms of subsection 6, the minister may at any time withdraw an asylum seeker permit. And the suggestion is to say upon notification as prescribed, if 6A, the applicant contravenes any conditions endorsed on that permit and does not receive condemnation as prescribed. So the inclusion there of upon notification and does not receive condemnation as prescribed. Regulation 3.4, conditions of the asylum seeker permit, the department may provide condemnation upon the request if the applicant can establish just cause. So this is the indication within the regulations. In terms of 6B, the application for asylum has been found to be manifestly unfounded, has been removed, and abusive or fraudulent, and the applicant has exhausted all appeal mechanisms, has been included there. And then 6C, the application for asylum has been rejected and the applicant has exhausted all appeal mechanisms, both of the above, to be in line with PAJA.
And what does the watchman say?
Chair, we seem to be lost as to where are we now. Because we are dealing... Yeah, in terms of...
3 and 4, the amendment is not between 3 and 4. Why do you get the 6? It's under what?
Chairperson?
Yeah.
Is it in the current act? Do we have the current act?
No,
Chairperson, are you referring to subsection 6, and there is no subsection 6. We just want to clarify that in the current act as it stands. But there's also, we're not even suggesting any amendments, because this still deals with section 22.
Yeah.
And there is no subsection.
So these are suggestions to amend the section 6 of the act, not to...
No.
Yeah, okay, so this is additional amendments which aren't addressed by the bill. And so perhaps they jumped too late on the bandwagon with this one, but... Yeah,
yeah, but nothing stops you to amend.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing stops the committee. The committee feels that it's something that makes sense, then you can be able to insert it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with it. But that, do things make sense, Chief?
I'm still studying the section to get the what is being suggested.
Okay, while they're still doing that, they can look for with others. Because I'm worried about time. Those members have to leave in the next few minutes. Okay, can we move on to 16?
Okay,
1624.
Okay, but there's also an additional suggestion in terms of amending the act.
Before we move on, my colleague has got some answer here.
Okay.
Chair, I think what is being proposed is just that there's some sort of a procedure that we have to prescribe in order to deal with the withdrawal of asylum seeker permits. Because the Act is not specifically clear on the procedure to be followed. It merely says that the Minister may withdraw.
That
it may be withdrawn, but they want us to prescribe a procedure on how.
And then we also, the amendment does not address that.
I don't think we've addressed it.
So why can't we then look at it? Does it make, if it makes sense
if
to me?
If we add in the prescribed manner.
And is there any amendment that we want to make based on this proposal?
Jay, we basically said that it shouldn't be a problem to include the procedure in the regulations. So we can just add in the prescribed manner. I'm sorry, I don't have the act in front of me right now. But just merely add in the prescribed manner, the minister may at any time in the prescribed manner withdraw an asylum seeker permit, and then we can prescribe the procedure in the regulations.
And they cannot refer to the regulations. We can't refer to be stipulated in the regulations. We can't refer.
And Jay, by the word prescribed,
prescribed,
it will always mean that
okay.
It will be in the regulations.
Okay. So all this, what's called, will then form part of your regulations when you do the regulations. All these proposals.
Yes, Chairperson, I think what would happen here, one would most probably, I think what they're driving at here is to be given reasons.
Yes.
In other words, this is an administrative decision. In terms of PAJA, in any case, obliged to give reasons. So
yes.
The minister made any, now we're just saying in the prescribed manner, and the prescribed manner would most certainly include a form that we're going to say, listen, I want to withdraw your refugee status. These are the reasons. Indicate to us why we shouldn't do that or why I can't do
that. Why must it go to the regulation?
Because it's administrative, Chairperson. You can't, in the Act, say, this is the form that you must complete.
Something from fraudulent document or whatever that you're found against the asylum seeker, would the regulation be sufficient to deal with that question?
Yes, Chairperson, because you'll have your authorising section in your Act, but what would be the regulations will then just say that the Minister will on this form.
You got it. Thank you very much. Let's move on to the next one.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Chair, there's just something that I picked up now in the Act. Where
yeah.
It says the minister may withdraw an asylum seeker permit. I think we might have to change that to the DG, because the DG withdraws a refugee status. So I don't know why the minister then withdraws asylum seeker.
Yeah, they still have to make appeals to the DG. But after I exhausted all these processes, the final person will be the minister.
Why we are saying, I think it says the minister may we at any time withdraw the asylum seeker permit. We want to take it down to minister so that to allow the process of appeal.
Also, the DG will, the director general will then withdraw the.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
So do you make it DG or minister? What are you saying, DG?
Another proposal was also that we realized later on was that the moment that the DG withdraws, instead of appealing to the minister, you appeal to the Refugee Appeals Authority. But that's just a proposal that we all that we have.
But the power is obvious. The appeals authority will have to be under the DG. Yeah, because the DG, from the DG goes to the minister. You can't have the appeals authority above the DG. So they cannot override the decision of the DG. Huh?
They can't, yes. Remember, your Refugee Appeals Authority is an independent authority if one looks at the decision-making process. So what would happen if the DG then decides, I'm going to withdraw your refugee status? It means it's an administrative decision. Now this person says, no, I'm not happy with the decision that's been taken. Then they go to the Refugee Appeals Authority. And this is something that we would want to look at, where you also say that the minister doesn't get involved at any given time when one looks at where a status has been withdrawn, etc. That it goes, they have an appeal to the Refugee Appeals Authority and not to the minister.
So how do we include that here in terms of the appeal to the appeals authority, or is it just
it is something that is still coming. We'll talk about it as we come to review.
Yeah. Okay.
So if a person is not happy with the appeal from the refugee board, can't a person go further? Appeal further?
Yes, well, a person can. If they're not happy with the decision taken by your Refugee Appeals Authority, what they then can do is they can apply to the court, a relevant court, for judicial review of the decision by the Refugee Appeals Authority. So you keep your executive authority out of the decision-making process.
That makes sense. Yeah, I'm not going to be running up and down with the appeal.
Yeah, to assist with regard to that, if I remember, we redefined court to mean, I think, magistrate court, which will be much less expensive.
Okay. Okay. In terms of subsection 7 of the Act, which isn't addressed by the bill, they're suggesting deleting subsection 7 as it is already stated in section 37.
Yeah. Delete subsection
22.7 as it's already stated in section 37.
Okay. Hey, Zulimit, are we together?
Yeah, we're still reading 22.7.
Because it's not addressed by the book.
So what are we amending? We're amending the act.
Chairperson, sorry, before we adhere to that specific, if we read the current section 7, it says any person who fails to return a permit in accordance with subsection 2 or to comply with any conditions set out in the permit, so it shall be guilty of an offence, etc. So if a person fails to return that permit, there's an offence coupled to it. Now, if you look at the current, as we're amending it, subsection 2, we say, upon the issuance of a permit in terms of subsection 1, any permit issued to the applicant in terms of the immigration becomes null and void and must be returned to the DG for cancellation. So now this person doesn't do it. Now there's a sanction. And this is what you want. So why do you want to? It's not just a question of referring to, because it's not being addressed, as they're indicating there, in my honest opinion.
I think that's fine. Okay,
okay, moving on to clause 16, section 24 of the Principal Act. The issues raised were with subsection 2 thereof, when considering application for asylum, the refugee status determination officer. They, in 2A, must have due regard for the rights set out in section 33 of the Constitution. They're saying refer to PAYA instead of in addition to section 33 of the Constitution, in conformity with the decision of the Constitutional Court in the Minister of Health versus somebody or the other. Yeah. So then subsection 2A, another contribution, is changes are not meaningful unless the department provides better training for state determination officers and properly trained independent interpreters. But that's not really a contribution in terms of... Yeah. Then also 24.2c, on request by the applicant, may postpone the hearing to a further date for the applicant to give effect to the provisions in subsections A and B above, including access to legal representation, interpretation, and provision of supporting information. So they're basically expanding on subsection C to allow for time for legal consultation and interpretation. Oh, they're suggesting inserting subsection C. 24.2.
Where's Brickman? Oh, I thought you have left, I'm sorry. But are you fine, eh? I know me must have died. It was not easy, this provision manager. Okay, man, don't keep on pumping out the rock.
Yeah. Chairperson?
Yes.
Sorry, with regard to the first two questions, the 2A,
yes.
The first one, I don't have a problem necessarily if we refer to the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, because that is the act that has been brought into operation in terms of Section 33 of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So that was also something that was raised at the relevant Cabinet Committee meeting. By the Honourable Deputy Minister Johnny De Lange, where he also indicated that one might want to refer there to the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, and not specifically Section 33 of the Constitution, because PAJA is the act that gives effect to Section 33 of the Constitution. So I don't have a big problem with that, and it was also stated in that specific case mentioned there, so that is something that we can, I think, agree to. But with regard to the second one, change is not meaningful unless it provides better training. Once again, we're getting into administrative issues here. Cannot be.
It's just a general statement.
Okay. At 24.2c, in the inclusion of 24.2c.
Where do you put it? Do you put it under the proposal that you put it under the proposal C?
Yeah.
Chairperson, with regard to through you.
Yes.
24.2c, they say on request by the may postpone the hearing to fit the date for the applicant to give effect to the provisions of subsections A and B above. Now, if you read subsection 2, it says, when considering an application for the refugee status determination officer. So it's not the applicant giving effect to the provisions of A and B. It's the refugee status determination officer that must have due regard to the rights set out in, once again, section 33. One can maybe there also refer to, well, which we say, PAJA, that has been referred, and may consult with or invite the UNHCR representative to furnish information on specified matters. That's your RSDO doing that, not your applicant.
But it still remains that if the applicant is requested by... So if the applicant requests the RSDO, on request by the applicant, the RSDO may postpone hearing to a further date.
Through you, Chair, I think this is where we're going to have abuse of the system. In a way that we are concerned about the time that is taken to decide, but then if the applicants will come up with, you know, a request for extension, won't we have some kind of an abuse that emanates from the request for extension?
Okay, moving on to subsection 3, and specifically subsection 3D, which states, with refer any question of law to the standing committee. The removal of the ability of the RSTO to refer a question of law to a higher authority may be unfavorable to the status determination procedure. It should be referred to the appeals authority, because there's a removal of all referral by the deletion of subsection 3D.
Chairperson, sorry, with all due respect, I disagree, because the Refugee Appeals Authority is going to sit on appeals. If this person wants to appeal, now he's sending a question of law to the Refugee Appeals Authority, who should be independent. I cannot see that working.
Furthermore, Chair, in a way, refugee reception offices are within the department, and legal services is there to deal with any questions of law in guiding the RSDOs in arriving at the decisions, should the need arise.
Okay, point noted. Subsection 4, where must the written reasons be furnished? What if no address is available? If it is to be refugee offices, will this not add to the already long queues and backlogs? 4B, the proposed substitution of section 24 4B with inform the applicant of his or her right to appeal in terms of section 26 is confusing, as section 26 is repealed in terms of clause 17 of the amendment bill.
Starting with the reference to that, I think we indicated even in our presentation that there was some kind of a mistake to refer to a repealed section. And if I remember correctly, the section should be 24. It should be 24, section 24 somewhere. But we'll I've got it in one of my notes, I think. I'll liaise with Adam to give him the correct section. But then with regard to the question of where must written reasons be finished? If what if there's no address available? I think this is one of the issues that through one of the cases that was referred, or there was an arrest of an asylum seeker who has apparently allegedly raped a certain woman. But then the address that was used for the department was for Mamelodi. But when he gave the police, he gave them a different address, and they had concerns with whether granting him bail or not. And surely we will not promote that people do not have fixed addresses where, when making applications, they will be staying. But then, okay, well, that is another issue, Chair. But
I've been reading, just you know, really, I mean, most people say, oh, I'm addressed when I want to have fixed addresses.
No, I think maybe let's not insist on the, because I mean, yes, they don't have fixed addresses. Some when they arrive, they don't have fixed addresses. Yes, and some they give. Most some do have fixed addresses, because isn't it after a person is now stabilized, they have a duty to report. They have a duty to report their changed address. Yes, as soon as the person is.
But why do you describe the address when we know there's a, if any, why you don't put it, or you have to be prescribed that is
Yeah, I think the bill doesn't say, or even the act doesn't say the address. The question is, perhaps when the RSDO gives reasons, I think that should be in writing, obviously, but then I believe it is a duty upon the applicant or asylum seeker to collect that is for the purpose of evaluating them and going to apply for an appeal if at all is not satisfied with the appeal. That is a logistical issue that asylum seekers and RSDOs will, as and when the RSDO says, come in on this day, I'll be finalizing your case, I'll need to know one or two things, then they'll be given reasons. I'm not sure if that will be necessary to prescribe where.
I think the real problem there is that adds to the queues as well, that it's going to have additional people waiting in queues.
Chairperson, if I may just also add there, I think it should stay as it is there, because you also want to place an onus on the applicant himself. If he's going to provide an address where you can give written reasons, then so be it. That onus is on the applicant to provide that to the refugee. We cannot take too much burden on the department itself to start running around and find people, and if they don't come back within 5 days, whatever the case may be. So I think it should remain as it is, in my view.
Chairperson.
Chairperson.
I would agree with you.
Okay.
Because most of them, they do change addresses almost every day.
So let us not put the burden of the department to run around.
Okay.
Because it is their duty to make sure that they get the necessary documents. So the honor should be on them to go and seek that document so that they can make an appeal if it's rejected.
Okay, that's why number we're still going to debate it on. That's fine, we know that.
Okay, there's a suggestion in terms of subsection 6. What is the definition of abandoned? Application must be deemed to be abandoned if the asylum seeker has not renewed his or her asylum seeker permit within 90 days. It seems to be clear to me, but I don't know. The condition needs to be clearly stated on the asylum seeker permit. What are the implications of an abandoned application?
Chairperson, to be quite honest, if you don't know what abandoned means, then go to the dictionary, you'll know. It means it's not proceeding. And we cannot go into the legislation and start writing abandoned means this and that. And so...
What I agree with you?
The question of... we come... To clarify every word in the
definitions.
Dictionaries are there.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a
suggestion. Okay. All right, thank you very much. Let's not try to do them. They're not here. John, don't look at John's mouth right now. John, take it easy. Relax.
Open the door, man. Open the aircon on.
Yeah, no, we're doing the last few pages now. No. We can just go through these things, man. Just go through them, all of these things, and then just have one submission and we finish. Members, okay, can we look at the critical area? Can we? Baba?
Sorry.
Your fire brigade is doing everything. Hey, Adam.
Yeah, I'm sorry, multiple times.
Adam, can we look at what are the critical areas that we must look at before we watch court? Because I think we must really finish. Do we have any in this submission? Do we have any critical amendment that we believe without this amendment there's nothing we can move with this thing? Because I really want us to finish.
Okay, well, let's see if we have this. We can finish, I think, if you do it in first week, we do this.
Okay, Sam, let's do it very fast then. Yes, I want us to finish this thing. Cannot
okay.
Keep on, so that members can just come with amendments when you amend it to carry on.
Okay, right. Moving on to a decision regarding application for...
Moving on to decision regarding application for asylum.
Okay.
It's 18.
Yeah. Okay, so the contributions are in terms of subsection 3. Why are the records of rejection not required to be sent to the Refugee Appeals Authority? Will only records requested by the Refugee Appeals Authority be sent? Okay, that's not really a big issue. A definition of hearing is needed in line with the refugee regulations. At the very least, the definition of hearing should be include opportunity to present oral, documentary, and other types of evidence. Hearing is defined in the regulations under one as means an informal, non-adversarial interview with the refugee determination officer.
Do we have what's called a definition of hearing in the... In the amendment of where is it referred to?
I think the bill it says the appeal authority should refugee appeals authority should determine. We don't use the word here. That was contained, I think, in the principal act, but then we've done away with that
okay.
Requirement.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In terms of section 4. No provision to enable or oblige the Refugee Appeals Authority to determine abusive claims without delay. Dealing with abusive or fraudulent claims should be given priority. providing for an accelerated manner to deal with the abusive and fraudulent claims. This is basically a point about the removal of manifestly unfounded.
Through you, Chair, I think we've revisited the part of the submissions. We'll retain manifestly unfounded, as we suggest or propose, and there are certain clauses that will be affected. But then the question of who does the reviews of manifestly unfounded claims will be that those will be reviewed by the Director General, but then there will be a delegate, and in terms of the delegations, they are currently going to be quality assurers, but the person who will be doing reviews will not be attached to a particular refugee reception office. So it should be someone independent of the office where the decision was made. So we have got some proposals that we've come up with, and also identified the areas where in the bill manifestly unfounded was appearing. So I think we'll, if the committee agrees to...
Can you bring them to the
board? Yes, we'll do that, Chair.
When? Are you having them now?
We're having them, but they're not typed. You can make a copy. I think the handwriting is...
Yes, okay. Can you deal with that when we do talk by clause? When we deal with this clause, you'll then...
Okay, thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so moving on to subsection 5, how is the handover of successful applicants to immigration officers to be handled? And this could be an administrative issue, but it has caused problems in the past. In terms of subsection 5, an asylum seeker whose application for asylum has been rejected in terms of subsection 3B must be dealt with in terms of the Immigration Act, unless he or she lodges an appeal in terms of section 24A. So they're basically saying clarity is needed on the handover to...
Chairperson, sorry, with all due, it's once again administrative. What you say in the legislation must be dealt with in terms of your Immigration Act. So, in other words, you become an illegal foreigner, and then you dealt with in terms of the relevant provisions of the Immigration Act. How are we going to hand you over, whether it's in a truck or that we can't?
Yeah. I think you have appealed for Adam to move in.
Okay, I'm going to deal with a couple. What I'll do is I'll deal with Karen.
Chair, I think we will, with regard to subsection 5, I think reference to Immigration Act, if you look at the section, it's rather a bit of a mistake there. It's refugee appeals authority must refer a matter back to their RSDO to deal with such asylum seeker in terms of the Immigration Act if new information which is material there. So this is where the refugee appeals authority says, there is new information that the department, RSDO, should go back and reconsider the case. It shouldn't be Immigration Act. It should be in terms of this Act, not Immigration Act.
Of this Act, which is what? Asylum
Refugees Act.
Okay. All right, thank you. Can we?
Okay, the next point is the cancellation of automatic review in terms of section, clause 18, section 25 and 26. Cancellation of automatic review would seem to be a retrogressive step. Although efficiency is clearly a concern, removing of the Standing Committee and Appeals Board decrease the opportunity for asylum seekers to have their circumstances considered, suggest that instead relevant authorities should be appropriately capacitated to perform their functions in an efficient way. I think we dealt with elsewhere.
Chair, if manifestly unfounded will come in as reviews and appeals, they're not completely taken out, but because of the new provisions that appeals are, there's a new provisions on appeals, it's not completely doing away with reviews.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got that.
Okay, clause 19, the reference here is to the Immigration Act must be an error as this is a non-sequitur. Moreover, the RSDO has no jurisdiction in terms of the Immigration Act. The word Immigration Act must be replaced by Refugees Act in subsection 5. Okay, I think that's the same as above.
I think, Chairperson, the colleague was referring to this section. So it means the other previous section 5 must remain as is. It's rejected asylum applications, which must be dealt with in terms of the Immigration Act. But then here, indeed, I think that's what it is referring to, the in terms of this act.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Can we, Adam?
Okay, I'm doing the.
Yeah, I know that members are ready with their list of amendments. So the exercise they're doing is just for formality, not to take into account the submissions, you know. You know, people have lists and lists and amendments that are going to come with the shock. Okay.
Chairperson?
Yes.
Sorry, if I may just, I'm just quickly looking through this, the bill, section 27, it's clause 21 of the bill, dealing with section 27, that we are, if you look at paragraph B, 27B, we say full legal protection, which includes the rights set out in chapter 2 of the Constitution of the Republic of Southern 19, comma, and then that except those rights that apply only to citizens, that's in brackets, the brackets shouldn't be there. We just, we will delete that. That's not drafted, we want, I don't know how that crept in.
That could have been my new decision.
Oh yeah, that could have been my inclusion. It is unclear why the proposed right to remain that is in the current section 27B should be removed. Okay, I'm just going to deal with all of these at once, and then we can address them. What is the implication of the negative decision by the Refugee Appeals Authority, i.e. that the applicant is no longer a refugee? To whom would an appeal of this decision be lodged? See below for this under Section 36 of the Act and Section 29 of the Bill on withdrawal of refugee status. So we'll address that one later at the end. Subsection C, revised to read, that after considering all the relevant factors and within a reasonable period of time, certifies that he or she, not would, remains a refugee, taking out indefinitely. Difficult to quantify the meaning of the word indefinitely. Certification should be granted if after a period of 5 years of continuous residence in the Republic, from the date on which he or she was granted asylum, the refugee is still or remains a refugee. Okay,
sorry, with regard to that C, on page 20, my page 21,
yeah.
What are the implications of a negative decision by the RRA that the applicant is no longer a refugee? Well, that person, if he wants to take the matter further, he's entitled to request judicial review of the decision in terms of PAJA. If PAJA then also finds that the decision should stand, that person becomes an illegal foreigner and may be deported. Obviously subject to the Provisions of this Act, but then they fall foul and they go over to the Immigration Act then, to be dealt with in terms of the Immigration Act.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. People are tired. Let's finish,
Okay, in terms of the indefinite
provision of subsection C, after considering all the relevant factors with a reasonable period of time, remains a refugee indefinitely.
No, that's not the same. Those are things that identify which
okay.
are physical areas that want the department to report.
Okay.
You'll be off for 3 days.
I've been working on xenophobia right now. Okay. In terms of subsection B, G, the replace the word inhabitants with the word nationals in order to align with the provisions of Article 22 of the United Nations Convention, which I think is a valid point. I don't think there'll be any problems with that. Chairperson, this is something that's in the current Act. It's entitled to the same basic health services, I think, if I'm, and basic primary education, which the inhabitants of the Republic receive. I think this has already been dealt with.
Yes.
What we're proposing is that paragraph G be deleted.
Okay.
So it doesn't even form part, because there's a new amendment to Section 27,
mm-hmm.
and it stops at F. I think one of the things that were raised there is they asked the question about G, the health services that must probably be included, that people wanted that to remain.
Mm-hmm.
But that's already being dealt with in B then.
Yeah, okay.
But there are a number of contributions about that. There are several people saying that section should in fact remain, and that education and access to public health need to be retained in Section 27. Okay.
Well, those are rights that, in my view, are contained in Chapter 2 of the Constitution. So it's contained in your Bill of Rights, and you cannot go against the Bill of Rights in any case. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's tautology.
Okay. Asylum, okay, section 22 of the bill. Asylum seekers should enjoy rights like refugees under subsections B and G in sections of section 27. So they're saying the similar rights should be enjoyed as above.
Asylum seekers and the refugees are two different. They cannot enjoy the equal status.
Mm-hmm. There would be no need for an asylum seeker to proceed to be a refugee because he or she enjoys everything else.
Yeah. Okay. Can we remove guys?
Okay. They're saying the inclusion of subsection 27AE that may seek and take up employment, undertake self-employment, and to study. Because this was also called the Wachinuka versus Minister, which said that these rights need to be specified for asylum seekers.
But asylum seeker taking up employment, that means it's wrong.
It was only for 3 months at a time.
Huh? How do you go to school for 3 months?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Huh?
I think what you're saying is, in terms of the in-visit system, they wouldn't even perhaps take up 3 months for waiting for a decision.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So from asylum seeker, it becomes a refugee again.
Okay.
Yeah. Asking for asylum, then this is granted. What does the children's bill say? John? The children's bill, I'm told that.
The children's act.
The children's act.
The children's act says that any child, but I mean, you know, a child from 18, has every right, the same rights as any South African child. To health and to education. So it's covered there.
These are serious issues we're dealing with, because the current problems that we are faced with this country, these are exactly issues that we have. But why can't we watch God? Why can't we do us of time? Why can't we flesh this point? Deal with them in our corners. Let's come back with some flesh on it. Do you have anything to suggest?
Yes, we wanted to deal with the, we have to propose to the committee the withdrawal of refugee status, I think, is in clause 29, wherein it talks about an appeal being lodged, subsection 3. It's on page 13 of the bill. It's subsection 3. Where it says, a person whose refugee status is withdrawn in terms of subsection 1 may lodge an appeal to, we are proposing that it should not be to the minister, but to the Refugee Appeals Authority, and then in the prescribed manner. So removing, we remove from minister within a period of such that to say by the Refugee Appeals Authority in the prescribed manner. Page 13 of the bill, subsection 3. Subsection 3, page 13. Line 12. It says, a person whose refugee status is withdrawn in terms of subsection 1 may lodge an appeal to the minister within a period of 30 days. We're proposing or suggesting to the committee that we shouldn't be the minister but the Refugee Appeals Authority, and in the prescribed manner. So the details about how do you apply when your status is withdrawn.
Again, right, my point.
Okay, well, if he's kept everything else before this, there's only.
Which other critical areas that you want us to look at? Please. Enough now, we must finalize this.
Okay.
Okay,
there is a crucial point. It's just the restriction of detention in section 20, clause 24 of the bill, on 23 of your document. They're saying that replace the restriction as follows. No person may be detained in terms of this act for longer than 30 days without a hearing before a judge or the magistrate of the magistrate court in whose area of jurisdiction the person is detained. Such detention must be reviewed in this manner immediately after the expiry of every subsequent period of 30 days. This is just to prevent person spending prolonged periods in detention.
Chairperson, with regard to that, I think that's precisely what you're saying, and it's also not more a judge of the High Court. It's court is defined as a magistrate's court. Yeah. And then furthermore, nothing has been deleted there, and such a detention must be reviewed in the manner immediately after the expiry of every subsequent period of 30 days. That's precisely what we're stating there. And that's not being deleted. What is being deleted is designated by the judge president of that provision for that purpose, etc.
I think what the problem
is that there's a gap. That detention exceeding 30 days must be reviewed immediately by a court in his... Must be reviewed. Yeah, okay, well, there's not significant...
I was taking out the judge, yeah. By court in whose area? No, it's fine, Jerry. I think it's correct. It's fine. I don't see anything. Okay. Next.
Okay. In terms of subsection 2, the detention of a child must be in line with conditions contemplated in section 28.1G of the South African Constitution, taking into consideration the principle of family unity and the best interest of the child.
This was one of those amendments that was stuck in one of the old bills. Okay. We have in fact changed it now.
Okay.
You will see at the end it says now taking into consideration the principle of family unity and the best interest of the child.
Okay,
so
thank
we
you.
Mentioned it specific.
Okay, it's addressed. There's no issues for identity documents of refugees. There's no time specified. What is the necessity of duplicating refugee status permits and refugee identity documents? Can the two documents not be consolidated?
Mm.
Okay. The validity of the documents to be... So this is clause 25, section 30 of the bill. The validity of documents issued to refugees be of a period not less than 3 years and preferably 5 years. This will remove a lot of the current bureaucratic work related to renewals of documents after every 2 years. This will also enable refugees to have travel documents of a longer duration. This is for the UNHCR. The documents issued to refugees should be aligned with other documents legally issued to foreigners in the country in terms of the color, etc. This is given a prejudice against persons with documents that aren't recognized because of difference of colors. In terms of section, a refugee must be issued with an identity document issued in terms of the Identification Act of 1997. This is from LHR. No reason to provide a recognized refugee with unrecognizable documents that foster discrimination. Identification Act will also have to be amended to apply to refugees then.
given the present delays in complying with requests for refugee ID documents, implementation of this provision in a meaningful way will require considerable additional resources. Okay, that's not a administrative issue.
I mean, they're permanent residents. Yeah, I mean, what is the proposal of members? Separate document, one document.
Stages.
Can you note that? Can you note this?
There are stages to be followed, Chairperson.
No, we'll debate this. John, what is your take on this one?
Chairperson, yeah, I wanted to throw it at the House and say, well, what they're saying is it's a whole issue between the green identity document and
I think it's
a verbal one.
Yes, I'm saying, what is your position?
Maybe Chair Wael is still saying, I think this will have major implications in terms of the Identification Act is clear about who gets the green ID book. Then if we say in terms of the Identification Act that won't be allowed, then it means we must go and amend the Identification Act. Then we won't be able to implement the particular clause until such time that we have improved. But in a way,
Chairperson, if I may come in there, sorry, and it's not I want to go against my colleague. I think this is a question, there's a thing of interpretation. A later specific act, by implication, repeals provisions of an earlier specific act. So if we should follow the route and amend this section in the manner that they're suggesting here, it might mean that when you start interpreting your Identification Act, this specific section would have amended your Identification Act by implication. But when one would have to go later on and then clean up the statute book and also then go and amend the Identification Act in line with what we are saying in the Refugees Act now. Thanks, Chair.
I think maybe we may discuss with my colleague there. With regard to the Identification Act, it does say we've got different codes in terms of South Africans have got zero, permanent residents have got one, and refugees have got two. That is
but
it,
not the same document.
It's not. But
I'm not the same. The refugees are the right document.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's dangerous. I mean, they use that thing, they just arrest you same time. So why can't you give them proper documents?
I think it's a question of public education about those people that maybe parents banks.
The current problem that you with is this issue. That you separate, you know, you club them and say, you red document danger to the society, and you green permanent resident, even the non-voting over here, they use their normal watch for the normal green barcode that they watch for the document. They've been coming with the smart card for refugees for 100 years now. Millions and millions have been spending, not even a card today.
Chairperson, but I must have ever agreed, is going to have major implications. Should we amend because of the codes and things that are allocated to specific numbers?
Well, what's wrong with that? What is the problem, Chair? What is the problem? Administrative or unconstitutional or what? I mean, there are two things.
I don't think it will be
don't go for that. Let's give this movie. Let's hear you.
Chairperson, I think considering our constitution, considering that we signed the UN Convention relating to refugees without any reservations as a country, and now considering the fact that our constitution is saying we are a non-discriminatory country, issues of whether it's a code one or two, because currently we are using the NPR to create the ID number of refugees, it's a 13-digit number. Therefore, it's only the question of the color of the document. And if you are going to a smart card or any form of ID, I think it also perpetuates, indeed, the issue of discrimination against refugees. So, but that is for the committee to decide, because then considering the way we are portraying ourselves to the international world. So,
yeah, no. I think the point that no. Either for it, you can change the document to green, and be almost the same as the South African. Yes, the bank part of what the problem with the bank is that they have programmed their computers to take certain numbers. Most of you are foreigners who run businesses. They can't access the bank because they don't have 13 digits, whatever.
Well, refugees do have the 13 digits. That maroon ID card, we use the NPR, the National Population Register, to create their ID number.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's the 13 digit is just that the last three numbers is 2-something, is 2-6 something.
Okay.
Yes, so they don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, so let's look at that argument. Let's John, I can hear the argument legally, but I think what the Buddhist put in is what each argument addressed. On a sort of note, it goes hand in hand in the treatment that we give to asylum seekers that are now sleeping outside the treatment when it's raining like this. It goes hand in hand with all. So we need to begin to bring them closer to the community. I think these are some of the points that we need to consider when we do this amendment. Okay, but yes.
Yes, I think it's only the main issue here is actually the color of the book. Not necessarily the digit, because it's a 13 digit, whether it's a 002 or 001, but the color is what's putting, creating the problem.
Sorry, I think just the additional problem is not only the color of the document, but the fact that you get two separate documents. You first get a Section 24 piece of paper, and then you have to wait until you get the final document, the refugee identity document, and that delay. Oh, the amount of time it takes to get the actual barcoded document.
No, but it's the same as you got the dual case. The dual case.
Okay.
So rather than that thing, it's even tear the parts of the document.
Okay.
So that one is fine.
Okay.
That one is fine. Yes, madam.
Chairperson, I just wanted to state that if it's just a problem of color, we can still address it within our amendment here, because we say it must be issued, a refugee must be issued with an identity document containing the prescribed particulars. So we can maybe...
What does the Act say on the Identification Act about the green barcoded document? Does it say that?
I don't think the Identification Act makes provisions for...
I think the Identification Act doesn't say what the color is.
Ah.
It obviously says there must be a photo, there must be name, surname, there must be the 13 digits number. It says how do you come up with that number, and also there are certain particulars that must be in the population register that are not reflected in the identity document.
So when we do the smart card, we're going to amend the legislation, by the way. You cannot
have
the smart card without the ID. We have to amend the legislation.
I think our Identification Act already talks about identity card. It doesn't talk about the document. The document is in terms of the old Identification Act. So currently the Act talks about the card, but there's a particular court case wherein the court said there isn't a problem if the department continues with the identity document instead of the card that is referred to in the Identification Act, because it's all about the content of the identification document, that they contain the same information that the current Identification Act says must be the identity card.
The content of your card will be different from what is contained in the ID card, in the ID document, isn't it?
No, sir, no.
Oh.
Yeah. No. From my understanding of the Identification Act and what the identity document contains, we'll still have the 13-digit number, a photo, the names, and...
biometrics?
No, the Identification Act doesn't say. There are four things, but in the main.
The firearm,
I think, without saying much about it, I think it's not contained in the Identification
the
Act.
Firearm?
The firearm is dealt with separately now in terms of
the firearm thing.
You know, it was an old in the Identification Act.
Okay. No, but that's fine. We'll sort of digest some of the issues. We'll need to just further. Can you work on something in your head around this issue?
Yes, Chairperson. I think the main issue that needs to be decided here is whether it should be a green document or a purple document or a blue document. That's the main issue. I know it sounds very petty, maybe, but that is... just with regard to the amendment of your Identification Act, if there is move towards fiddling with a 13-digit number, then you will have to amend the Identification Act. But if you don't fiddle with that number...
Let's agree that we'll look at the argument that is placed by the on the table, that there's a need, in fact, to look at these issues. I think there's a need to look at those issues.
And as we go to caucus, I think when we come back, next Tuesday we'll be sort of going through clause by clause and passing the thing. By that time we'll have that sort of digested all of these issues. But we still have anything critical, Chief.
Okay. Yeah, there's something about the obligations of refugees.
Again, the similar issue of, in terms of clause 27, referring to section 34 of the Act, again, the issue that inform the refugee reception officer as opposed to inform any reception officer. And again, I think this is, there's been court decisions on this.
No, no, thank you.
That it should be.
No, no.
Okay.
Is there anything? No, members, can we agree that the rest of the remaining things are things that in our corners where we'll be meeting will then go through the remaining issues, right? Just highlight them. I want us to close this meeting. I want us to close it now.
Withdrawal
of refugee status that they have done
with it. Maybe still on that, there's something that will be consequential flowing from what I mentioned earlier. We'll indicate it to the committee. Yeah.
That's fine. Members, can we propose that we're done now with the public submission? Therefore, on Tuesday, members can come with their small documents, clause by clause, that have been amended, and Okay? We're done. No, we're done, please. Don't stress. We're done. I think we have given, we have given much time to public submissions, than deliberations of members. So this is what we have done. But I think they were very much informative at the same time, helping us to understand. And we still want to thank you very much. The energy says, hey. So we'll watch out. Members, we'll then meet on Tuesday, first thing in the morning, go clause by clause, from clause, which clause we start from, any clause? Clause by clause, I think, from...